5 years ago, when I began this ministry with you all, I refused to use the phrase church year. If you were in leadership at the time of my arrival, you will remember my stubbornness about this phrase and the way I tried to kick you under the table when that phrase slipped out of your mouths. I had and have a stubborn need to believe that this life we are building together is a 12-month endeavor. People die and babies are born and relationships are tested in July and August. We are as lonely as we can be, joyful in the summer months. Community is needed. Songs must be sung, wisdom shared. The spirit moves as the garden grows. It's why in a typical year, I am here for 12 months rather than 10, and hope that you are too. But I also know that it is foolish. I have also learned that it is foolish of me to think things don't shift at the summer and as the days stretch into longer hours and shift again as the fall approaches. It is good to see so many of you back again. But we know that right now, in the depth of September, parents are harried. Our children and the teachers, we could place our own home front tutors in this space as well. We are overwhelmed. We're navigating new classrooms, new curricula and schedules. We're fighting the clock and the news and what our young ones already know and what they need to. And of course, it's not just the academic world that has picked up in full swing. Stay-at-home moms and CEOs have found spare time that I am under the impression doesn't actually exist. And they've somehow become community organizers with calendars to November, phone banks on Wednesday nights, and fundraising dinners on the weekends. Whether our schedules have changed or we're just part of the rush of the world, we are each trying to figure out how to get out the door on time, how to get offline, when to listen to the news, and what and how to decide what it is we should trust. As one leader said to me recently when I remarked at feeling an energy from the congregation, from you all, that didn't match the anticipated joy of starting another season together, she said, "The world is anxious. We are anxious, and we're bringing it here. And you should." I watched last Sunday as so many of you found your way to the stations we created for our water communion. A weeping well that was filled to the brim, like the grief and fear and worry that seems to find its way into parts of our bodies we didn't know had hollow spaces that could be filled. And stones that when dropped in pushed the water over the edge. We needed something to cry with us, and so you lined up looking for that moment. We needed to see that there was beauty in what otherwise overwhelms. And then there was the station in the back, and I think that one had an even longer line, wherein we could write the things from which we needed to be released. The magic of dissolving paper and a swirl of the water. For a moment, it all disappeared. For a moment, we could imagine forgiveness and healing and the erasure of wounds and the quieting of regrets being that easy. We come to this place with full lives, distractions that are as joyful as they can be reasons to weep. Why shouldn't you bring all of that here? In you, let there come silence, begins Jan Richardson's poem. It's entitled, "To All That Is Chaotic." In you, let there come silence. Let there be a calming of the clamoring, a stilling of the voices that have laid their claim on you, that have made their home in you, that go with you even to the holy places, but will not let you rest. Will not let you hear your life with wholeness or feel the grace that fashioned you. Let what distracts you cease. Let what divides you cease. Let there come an end to what diminishes and demeans, and let depart all that keeps you in its cage. Let there be an opening into the quiet that lies beneath the chaos, where you find the peace you did not think possible and see what shimmers within the storm. This summer, as I sat in a courtroom of all places, I thought of you, and I wondered what this year would be for. I had been asked to accompany a member to his hearing, and a group of us from church arrived ready to have our physical presence only speak to support him. I was surprised. I think we were all surprised when the judge dismissed his peer members but asked me to stay. I heard the lawyers agree to waive my oath faster than I knew what was happening, and I could feel my clerical collar rubbing against my throat as I searched for saliva, if not words. I prepared to testify, and I prepared to defend as I was cross-examined to questions such as, how many hours does it take to become a Unitarian Universalist? What are the requirements? Who teaches? Who witnesses? What's the big deal about signing a book anyway? When the prosecutor shrugged and smiled and dared me with a, isn't it all the same? Can't you just show up to church on Sunday? What's the difference in becoming a member? I had no coy response to return, but a testimony again. And I remember thinking, you have no idea how ready I am for these questions. You have no idea what you are missing in not knowing the answer yourself. MORAD, congregation for nearing 2 years, and a friend before was granted religious asylum that day. Are we still here to wait if his safety will be appealed, if his body and spirit will be safe from his place of birth? Perhaps our chaos, our anxieties, the navigation of a new space or the tending to new projects or ways in which we will have to figure out the world for ourselves or for our children is not as dire, or maybe not as acutely challenging as MORAD's, not as extreme. I'm not telling anyone here to have a perspective check. I want to be really clear about that. But what I do wonder today, having lived through a brief moment of harsh vulnerability in which I watched a man's life not just be changed, but be saved because of his belonging and his believing into this tradition, can this faith save your life? Not in some metaphorical way, not in some poetry or idealism, but can this religion, this congregation, this community, can it be your defense against that which distracts and divides us? To that which diminishes or demeans our spirit, could you testify to the purpose of these hours? In my synagogue, the judge said at the very, very, very end of the hearing, having not given a hint of how he would rule. In my synagogue, my rabbi teaches that there are three markers of identity: behaving, believing, and belonging. Hear those? Someone can believe in our principles, believe they are good and worthy, and maybe even say the often heard remark, if I were religious, I'd be a UU. And someone could move through the world inspired by how we wish to build the beloved community, but never do so in the holding or accountability of a congregation, in relationship with others, in the shared work, in the shared vision, in covenant. And someone, none of us, I'm sure, could show up here week after week and sing the hymns and hear the words and sit in the silence and root on our children. But none of these alone, according to the judge at least, could save a life. Behaving, believing, and belonging, it was the belonging that he harbored on that said, yeah, he may have thought he was a Unitarian Universalist, but in that moment of becoming a member, he was something larger than himself. He was yours, and you are his, and we are each other's, and something happens in that moment. None of these alone can save a life. So I come before you today asking what you need this year. Rosh Hashanah has concluded and Yom Kippur awaits. Our siblings in faith are taking stock of their lives. They've named regrets and asked for forgiveness and offered it the same. Their God, as we said, will plan the next year according to their honest reflections of the year past and how they participated in making their lives. So what do you need? And where will you find it? Unitarian Universalism can be our anchor, can be the stillness and the silence, be the charge and the change, be some habit for our children or community for ourselves only. But we must prepare the soil of our souls for this growth and change. It doesn't just happen. We must give not only our hearts, but this faith and this particular year, the attention and concern of a child we are helping raise. Not because it will make this place better, not because we need something more to do or tend to or have the responsibility for, my God, but because our hearts are harried. And our fears reduce us to judgment rather than curiosity. And because our lives are full to the brim, we are spilling over. And something happens when we know that we are not alone in this overwhelm. Something happens when we behave as if we believe another world is possible. Something happens when our beliefs begin to draw us closer to one another, even to those we least expected. An opening into the quiet that lies beneath the chaos begins to form, a shimmer in the storm. Now, that might sound hyperbolic to you. That might sound preposterous. You might be giving me the litany in your brain of why that's not true for you here. And to that, I offer you the sage advice from Alcoholics Anonymous that reminds us that sometimes we have to behave as if we believe something is better, something is possible until we know it is true ourselves. Why not give it a try? Is the reward not worth the risk? James Cone, father of Black theology and prophet recently lost, has said, "We come to church to find out where we are in relation to the actualization of our dream." In other words, we come to church to measure the distance between the world that we long for, our own, our families, our hearts, our countries, our planet, big and small, the distance between what we long for and what the world is. We come to find connection and hope and sustenance. We need to survive and to do our part to build the lives we dream about. So let this be a year in which we testify to the hours, to the friendships, the way our hearts have changed and our minds too. Let this be a year in which our habits are considered and our words and the way our covenant with one another invites us always to begin again. Too many of us are too far from the way in which we want to be in the world, too far from a life we wish to live. Let this be a year in which we find a companion in this faith. Even if you don't claim it as yours, it is here as an invitation for you to try on. We may just lessen the distance between our lives lived and what we dream for our life to come. A person changes, I told the judge. It takes many hours, a lifetime, in fact. But it is the gift of becoming when we do so together. So Happy New Year. May we make it so. And blessed be.